Good. So I want to discuss now our next sugya. So now we're moving to our new Makoro sheet. We could send away the Bereach and Beis HaAsurim. About a Baal HaBayis who is chozer from the agreement. And so I want to treat this as, I want to treat separately the case of the Baal HaBayis who's chozer and the case of the Poel's chozer, because the Poel has special rules based off Kili B'nei Yisrael Lavadim, V'Lavadim, Lavadim. So let's first look at the cases of the Baal HaBayis who breaches, and then we'll look at cases of the Poel who breaches. So I think here we have to be careful about distinguishing two separate questions, or you might even say three separate questions. One question is, can the Baal HaBayis back out? Right? Meaning, is there such a thing as being able to break an agreement? Right? Does, you might say, does he have the power to dissolve an agreement that he contracted into? So the Gemara talks about a Baal HaBayis who's chozer b'emtza hamalacha and polim or a chozerim. And the first thing we just want to know is like, well, what does that mean? Does it mean that you have the power to back out, or does it mean that you can't really back out legally? And so you've got to pay damages, which kind of evidence that you weren't able to back out of the agreement. The agreement is still in force. So there's a bit of a conceptual point here. What is it that we mean when we say that the Baal HaBayis was chozer? Do we mean that in a legal sense, that he has the legal power to dissolve the agreement unilaterally in the middle, so long as he pays some sort of compensation? Or do we mean that he legally has no power, and it's just that physically he threw away the polim? He has no work for them. He's not letting them into the house. In which case, there's going to be some compensation as evidence of the agreement that's still ongoing, that derives from the still ongoing agreement. Does everybody see that? Does everybody get that distinction? Guys?
Yeah.
Okay. I guess you could say no if you don't get it. The second question is, is it permissible for the Baal HaBayis to be chozer? Meaning, when does he have the Hofeldian privilege to do so, such that he hasn't wronged anybody? He has no duty. Remember, Hofeld's, a privilege just means you have no duty to not back out. So you might say, when is it rashai? When is it permitted? When does he have the Hofeldian privilege to be chozer? And then the third question is...
Could you expand a little bit on your first two questions?
Yeah. So the first point is, does the Baal HaBayis have the power legally to be chozer? Does he have the unilateral power to dissolve a contract that's still in force? Now, to flesh that out further, right, well, we know, right, he could lock the polim out. So there are two ways to kind of look at this. One is to say, yes, he has the power to dissolve the agreement, but he's got to pay damages. He's got to pay compensation for dissolving the agreement. It's like a kind of nezek. The other way of looking at it is, no, he doesn't have the power to dissolve the agreement, and the thing that he's paying is really paying out the rest of the contract because the contract is still in force. Right? So he has no power to dissolve it. He has maybe a physical ability to, you know, force the polim to not show up to work. He can lock them out of his house. But he has no power to dissolve the agreement. The agreement's still in force, and that's why he's got to pay out the rest of it. That's the first point. You want to follow up on something there, Yakir?
No.
Okay. The second point is, under what conditions / when is it the case that the Baal HaBayis has a privilege, a Hofeldian privilege to be chozer, that he has no duty to not back out of the agreement? Right? So when is it rashai for him to tell the polim, stay home and don't show up? You see that, Yakir?
Okay.
When is it permissible for him to tell the Poalim, I have no work for you? It may never be. The answer may be never. But it's kind of a different question, right? We're not asking about his power to dissolve. We're asking about when is it permissible for him? When does he have a duty not to dissolve it, / when does he have the privilege to dissolve it?
Okay.
Now, the third point, say, related, very much related to the first two, is, well, what are the consequences for the Baal HaBayis backing out? What kinds of damages, what kinds of obligations, what kind of duties does he have in a case where he's chozer? Either chozer in the legal sense or chozer in this kind of physical sense where he doesn't let them in. Right? What are the consequences and duties that come along with him doing that? Okay? Those are, I think, just important to distinguish between those three questions that all kind of are going to crop up in the sugya. Okay. Now, the sugya itself is, maybe make another meta point here, both about our specific sugya and about a lot of the things that we've been seeing until now. One of the things that's striking about these sugyos is how little is in the Gemara and how much is in the later Rishonim, and sometimes even in the Achronim here. It's true with all these Schiras Poalim sugyos. You see, our Gemara itself is, you know, an amud and a half, and yet the discussions that come out of it are very rich, and a lot of the core principles are really teased out by the Rishonim. In this sugya, for example, if you look at the Rambam in this Chazara sugya, the Rambam literally just like regurgitates the Gemara. The Rambam doesn't really flesh out any of the post-Gemara principles that are elaborated on by the Ramban and Tosfos and the Rush and the Tur. I mean, so that whole world just is, the Rambam doesn't codify any of it, which is interesting. But some of the core principles in our sugya really come out of the Rishonim's later interpretation of the sugya, not the Gemara's discussion itself. And that's true for some of the earlier sugyas that we've seen, like, for example, Aschalas and Blacha as a Kenyan, etc., etc. So in our sugya itself, the Gemara doesn't mention it so much. The Gemara is not very explicit about this. But the Rishonim seem to articulate a few distinct principles that they take out of the sugya. And I think the Pisgei Choshen actually has a very perspicuous breakdown of the various principles that are at the heart of our sugya, which I put at the very top of this new Makoro sheet. So let's actually work with the Pisgei Choshen's framework for a second. So the first thing the Pisgei Choshen says in the top of the new source sheet is in Perek Yud of Schiros. He says, look, there are some kinyanim associated with Schiros Poalim. Ulu achar kinyan ein shneim yecholim lachzor. After a kinyan, neither party could back out. Of course, that's an infelicitous phrase because it's ambiguous between saying that it's not permissible for you to back out and saying that you have no power to back out. Right? The next line is v'im chazru yesh kama chiluk edinim. Right? So you see the semantic and conceptual ambiguity in ein shneim yecholim lachzor is kind of ambiguous between these different Hofeldian incidents, right? Does he have no ability, of no power to back out? Or is it saying that you have no right to back out, meaning you're under a duty to not back out? It's not clear which one of those he's trying to say. Then he says, "V'im chazur yish kam b'chiluk edinim." In Sif Beis, I think the Pisgei Choshen touches on the first core principle that the Rishonim get out of our sugya. Does anybody want to tell me what that is? So you're hiring Poalim, and then the Baal HaBayis is Chozer. So what's this core principle?
They don't show up for work,
Well, here we're talking about the Baal HaBayis who's chozer. I have a different principle in mind. Anybody want to help me out?
This is making the nebuch, meaning if they're not able to wash the wire, and if there are no losses, then the Baal HaBayis is internal.
Yeah, so put that a little differently for me, Gabe. That's right. Say it in slightly different words.
Gabe? I'm trying to guess how you want to rephrase that.
So what's the principle?
You use the Hofeld sum.
No, you don't need a Hofeldian phrase. You don't need. I don't have a Hofeldian distinction in mind. Just give me a clear cut. What? We're looking at Bayes in the Pesachim.
The Poland did something wrong.
Not that they did anything wrong. The Baal HaBayis is the one who's breaching here. The Baal HaBayis is Chozer.
Right,
but...
The Baal HaBayis is obligated to ensure that the employee receives the wages for when he's contracted with them. Either he needs to pay that or they can find something else that they pay those wages. But he is required to ensure that they receive the contracted wages.
Well, I would disagree with that formulation.
The D4 alone is enough to... Even with the D4, if they haven't been able to find work, so there would be a loss in the Baal HaBayis to compensate.
Still slightly different from that. I mean, what I want to get at is the point of Imotze HaPoel Ata Bekalos Lehistaker B'Mokam Acher B'Oso Schum Ein Lo Al Baal HaBayis Afilu Taromas. It sounds like if the Poalim could find work elsewhere, then there's no case whatsoever that the Poalim have against the Baal HaBayis. So, Gabe, how do you want to phrase this? What's the principle here?
He's responsible for the Poalim looking for work.
Well, I don't even think that... I wouldn't look at this in terms of the Baal HaBayis' responsibility.
Is that the Poalim are eligible, they have a school to receive the...
I think the idea here is, you might call this almost like a duty to mitigate your losses, right? So here the Poalim were hired by Baal HaBayis, at least Bedibor calls them up, he says, I want you to show up. And then the Baal HaBayis says, no, I don't need you guys. So the Poalim can't just sit home and get a windfall, right? No, they've got to go and see if they can mitigate their losses by finding alternative employment. Imotze ha-poel ata bekalos lehistaker b'makom acher, b'oso schom, ein lo al Baal HaBayis afilu taromes. The Poel has no claim if there's work readily available to him. So the point here is that there's only a claim right that the Poel has against the Baal HaBayis if he suffers a real loss because of him. But he has a duty to make sure that he doesn't suffer a loss. The Poel has that duty, right? So the Poel's got to go and see if he could find employment elsewhere. And it's only if he can't, it's only then that he has some sort of claim right against the Baal HaBayis. So I think that's the first interesting principle that he's pointing us to, which I think is pretty straightforward, at least in the Rishonim's interpretation of the sugya, is that there's no damages for breach. The Baal HaBayis has no liability if the Poel can recover his losses by finding alternative employment, if he can mitigate his losses. Do you see that, guys?
Yes, put a little more responsibility on the Poel than
we had seen. That's right. There's a certain responsibility on the Poel to go ahead and make sure that he doesn't suffer any damages. Let me point out where I think this comes from in the sugya. It's not so evident. But the Gemara says that, you know, Hitu in the Mishnah could refer to Chazara, that one party breached. This is actually a third interpretation of what Hitu says in the Mishnah means. We have the Yushalmi, which means the Kemo She'asu Chavareichem view. We have the Bavli's view, the first Bavli view, which is that it's the Shliach who breached and made a different value than he was hired to hire them for. Then we have a third interpretation now, which says that, oh, it's a case of breach. That's the Bavli's second pass. So the Bavli says, if they're Sochas the Poalim, Hitu says, Ein lahem ela taromes. All you have is taromes. So why do all you have is a grievance? Didn't the Baal HaBayis was Chozer, right? So what does Rashi say? Ayin Vav Mem Beis, Ein Lem Zelzel Taromes, De Amar Lahen Taskiru Atzmechem L'Achirim. The Baal HaBayis could say, "Why you have no claim right against me. Go hire yourself out to someone else." So you see, Rashi here is implicitly assuming, or at least Rashi reads into the sugya, that so long as they can find alternative employment, then there's no claim right for compensation. Okay? The Meiri also makes this point. Aval im matu malacha kala haimena osha kimosa lasos, if the poem could find alternative employment, the Yamarlahem balabayas tzuva asu, ain kaina lataromas. There's no claim right for compensation. So it's not explicit in the sugya, but you can see the Rishonim clearly read this in based on the idea that trying to explain why there's no claim right for compensation in a case of Hazara. They're saying the assumption is that you can find employment elsewhere, in which case there's no liability. It's implicit also in the Gemara's discussion later on in Ayin Vav Amud Beis. The Gemara is actually talking about the opposite case of a poel who wants to back out of an agreement with the balabayas. We'll see later that if it's davar ha'avod, then the poelim are not allowed to back out if they're going to cause the employer a loss. But the Gemara says, if there are other workers available who could do the same work for the balabayas, then the balabayas has no ability to block the poelim from being chozer. Just find other poelim to do the same work. Aval yesh poelim liskor, v'amar tzevis chor me'elu, ein lo aleim el taromas. Right, so in the reverse case, the Gemara is explicit about it. That the balabayas has no claim right against the poelim if he could hire other workers which would mitigate the losses that he would suffer. All right, so you see, I think the first important point here is to say that clearly there's a duty to mitigate, and when those losses are fully mitigated, then there's no liability on the balabayas. Everybody masking? A resounding shtika koda. Okay.
Sorry, you didn't say something to me. Bad signal there for a second.
Cole or Gabe, who wants to go first?
I'll go for it.
What did you ask? I lost you for about 10 seconds.
No, I'm saying you see. I think these Rishonim are clearly working with this duty to mitigate. And if there are no losses and there's no claim against the balabayas, there's no liability for the balabayas, the whole discussion of losses here only arises if there's a clear loss suffered by the poel. If there's no damage, i.e. a case where the poel could find alternative employment at the same rate, etc., there's no claim, right? There's no basis for liability. That's the first core principle. That's the first core principle that comes out of the sugya.
Sense.
Yeah.
They don't have a right to this particular work. You have a... What would be the alternative? The alternative would be that, like, no, I was hoping to get... I made a move with you. I wanted to, do this particular job. And it seems like, no, when you have a right to the output, meaning from your perspective, the wages, you can get the wages elsewhere, presumably at, no great... increased in inconvenience or whatever it is, then
that's right. I mean, that's the basic upshot. You might have thought that they have some sort of binding claim against him, and that he breached, Balabai's breach, there should be some liability, some penalty. The answer is no. If it's a breach with no losses, then there's no claim for compensation. That's kind of the idea here. And not only that, they have a duty. They have a duty to go ahead and mitigate their losses. What's that?
The sine qua non for compensation is law.
That's right. And you have a duty to make sure there are no losses. That's right. That's exactly right. And you'll see one of the core tensions here is we've seen this a little bit already in the Machlokas Ramban and Tosos. To what extent are Nezikin principles at work here? And what extent are contract principles at work here, right? This kind of leans into the Nezikin principles. Gabe.
Yeah, one of the things I was struggling with when you were pressing me to articulate this is how you can express this from a contractual perspective. Meaning, if there's like a kinyan, so to speak, the contract has taken effect. Meaning, is the balabai chayav to pay wages through the clause of the contract, or is he not? Why does it matter whether... How do you express this?
Yeah.
How do you articulate the contract so that there's a clause that allows the rabbi to get out of paying wages if the following find another work? It seems a little bit hard to get that out.
Yeah. I think so, Gabe. I think you're right. There's going to be a problem here, and this is what I was mentioning. This leans more into a tort theory, right, rather than a contract theory. And you're saying more. Yeah. You're saying more than that, right? How does, if you really think the underlying theory here is like contract, so there's an obligation of the Baal HaBayis to uphold his contract. Why should his duty to pay be contingent on the Poalim's losses, right?
Yeah, that's my question.
Yeah, I think it's a very important question. And that's exactly basically what I'm trying to tease out of the sugya is that this is not a trivial point to make contingent all compensation on there being some actual loss. You may not have thought that would be the case. I don't have a good answer for you, except remember earlier in the year we had this distinction between like economic theories and like moral theories. And so you might say that, morally speaking, you're right. The Baal HaBayis ought to have a duty to pay. But we want to make sure that the poel is not incentivized to take advantage of that. And so we basically knas him, or we try to incentivize him to find employment elsewhere and make his compensation contingent on him actually suffering a loss. That's like one way of looking at it. The other way of looking at it is to say our only interest in enforcing contracts is to protect people from suffering losses by relying on the contract. That's like our real interest in protecting agreements in the first place. But we have no interest in protecting contracts if no one's going to be hurt by not protecting them. You hear what I'm getting at? I don't know if that's
a contract. We're just not enforcing the contract at this point.
What's that?
Are you saying that we're just not enforcing the contract? If we were to enforce the contract, the Baal HaBayis would need to pay wages?
Yeah, something like that. Like, in principle, the Baal HaBayis owes him money. But, you know, we don't really make him pay. We're not going to enforce that unless... there's some loss that suffered.
Got it. That's interesting.
Yeah, that would be one way of trying to make sense of this. I need to think more about it, but yeah, it's I'm going to send out an article for everyone to read over the weekend about contract theory, which I think tries to make sense of this kind of this phenomenon. Yeah, let me point out, by the way, that this duty to mitigate and this idea that Gabe is pointing out, that there's no duty to pay if there's no losses, is true even after Haschalas HaMalacha. Meaning, even if there's like seems to be a kinyan on the Schiras Poalim. Look, for example, here at the Pisrei Choshen Sif Zayin. So that's the last of the Pisrei Choshens in the first section of the first page. Hischil HaPoal B'Malacha, V'Kol Shekein L'Achar She'asu Kinyan Al Haschiras, blah, 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 blah. All these dinim. And he says, Imotse ata lehaskir atzmo, even if there was a kinyan, right? And even if the poel is fully entitled to compensation, etc., etc., if the poel can nevertheless mitigate his losses, he's motse ata lehaskir atzmo, ain lo alav ela taromes. All he has is a grievance, he doesn't have a claim right for compensation. So this idea that compensation depends on damages is true both before and after a kinyan. So which makes Gabe's observation even stronger, right, Gabe? Gabe?
Is that anyone?
I think this is Gabe, no?
Cola?
Yeah. All right.
That's still true, though. Meaning, in one case, there is not even a taromes. In this case, there is taromes.
Well, that is a good point. So you might say that, meaning you're saying that this is, yeah. So you're saying that in the, after the Kenyan case, there's a tyromes, even if you can mitigate. And in the pre-Kenyan case, there's no tyromes, assuming that he could find it without tircha. Or in no Kenyan case. Yeah. The only, my only question is, I'm not sure if he's assuming, if the Pesach Chosh is just assuming in the post-Kenyan case that he could find without tircha. Or no, you're saying there's taromes in virtue of the fact that he breached the agreement. Right? So I think you're right, yeah. That's what it sounds like. I think that's a very good observation, Yakir. I think you're right. But notice that, so there's, you're right that there's a distinction. So the chazara is more egregious in a post-Kenyan case, but still doesn't give rise to compensation, which is important. Right. Yeah. So I agree with your observation. I don't think it undermines the point that I was making totally. It just points out that there's gray, shades of gray within no claim right for compensation land. Okay. So that's the first important point to take out of our sugya. We're going to stop in 1 minute. Let me just point out that there are all sorts of interesting discussions here in the postgame. Does this duty to mitigate apply in a case where the work that you would have, the alternative work that you would have to do, is more cumbersome than the work you would have done for this balabayas? I told you you're going to work for me. I was going to have you paint, which you're fine with doing. Then I breach, and now you got to mitigate your losses. And the only other employer is Ben, and Ben wants you to move his bookshelves, which is much more laborious. So do you have a duty to mitigate and take on that labor? Or can you say, I don't want to do that. I want to get compensated for my losses. So what do you guys think? What should that, what's the rule in that case? What? Because you have a duty to mitigate. You have a duty to, regardless of how hard the labor is. It's interesting. So your theory is they got to do it no matter what. Why do you think that?
I mean, are these two different balabayas or one
balabayas? Two different.
Right.
Two different.
Because then you're putting out an extra responsibility to the original balabayas, I think.
Saying it's not fair to burden the balabayas with the... But he breached. Right? The first balabayas breached, so... So who do we put the burden on here?
Right,
like,
who is this?
Right. So the more you agree with Gabe, who thinks that in principle the balabayas has a duty to pay... The more you might think that the poilim have no duty to undertake the more laborious labor. Well, they have a choice, right? Like the ball's really in their court. And the balabayas only has a claim that you should mitigate if it's easy for you to do so. Right? So notice this is the machlokas in Shulchan Aruch. So if you look at the bottom of page 2, the Shulchan Aruch in Shin Lamed Gimel Beis first says, I'll just highlight it here in the Vahusha Akshavin and Iskarim Klau. Aval im motzin misha yaskirim, if the poilim can find alternative work. All they have is a grievance. And the Shach says that's if there's tircha involved. Okay, we'll talk about that in a second. And we'll talk about that probably next couple of rounds. The Yeshomrim, some people say, Da'afilu lo matza rak melacha kveda mizu. Right, so you find only harder work. Rak shirotzim lehosef bisharim. But Ben's going to pay you more for the harder work. So it's like a fair exchange. Tzrichim lachaskir atman v'makom acher. Then they have a duty to go and do that. But yesh cholkin. So you see there's a machlokes here about whether, like, who basically has the right of way between the balabais and the poel. Could the balabais say, oh, you had a duty to mitigate, you didn't? Or could the poelim say, no, like, we weren't ever interested in that kind of work, even though it pays more, it's just not what we do. In which case, the burden falls on the balabais. And of course, I mean, this next thing is obvious, I think. V'im einam motzim lios niskarim el bepachos, Mishalim lahem apachas. Right? If they could only get, let's say, 75% of the wages they would have made by you, then you just make the difference up to them. Like that marginal difference is the damages. Okay. Now we'll stop here, but let me just gesture for 1 minute to what I want to discuss next time. So I want to pick up with this discussion about taromes. Why is there taromes in the case of you can mitigate? we'll see the Shach says that it has to do with how much tircha is involved in mitigating. The taromes is for the tircha that you have to suffer in finding another employer. And therefore the Shach says, if there's no tircha involved, then there's no taromes even.
Right.
So it could be like a totally clean breach with no claim right for damages and no grievance of taromes at all. Then I want to talk about this interesting discussion, whether is it permissible for the Baal HaBayis to be chozer before the Poalim show up to work in a case where they can mitigate. So that's this discussion here in the Tur, Simon Shin Lamed Gimel, and the Sma, about whether there's a, is there like a curse of Mechusar Amana in a case where the Baal HaBayis is chozer, kodem shehizchilu b'melacha. Then I want to talk about cases of damages for breach before a kinyan. So it's like a garmi kind of nezek, and what conditions have to obtain for that garmi nezek to exist. And then finally, I want to talk about cases of damages within the agreement. Remember that Ramban-esque view that holds that you're paying damages for you're paying damages as payment of the agreement itself. So I want to scale our discussion along those lines. All right, good. So let's stop here and let's pick up next week, and we'll actually have to follow up with everyone about the Chanukah Mesiba.
Yeah.
Gabe, you're not going to be here, right?
No, I won't be here.
Oh, we're going to miss you. Akira, are you around at all for Tuesday or not? You're not in town.
I might be in the Chabura. I'm probably not going to stay till the evening though.
Maybe we should do a lunch then if you're around.
No, but dinner's probably more convenient for everyone.
Let's ask around. Let's see who can make it. All right, shkoyach everyone.
I'm happy. I'll end it for dinner.
Ah, awesome. All right, great. All right, shkoyach everybody. So we'll pick up with this sugya of Chazara de Baal HaBayis on Tuesday. I'm going to send out actually some interesting readings on these topics to help fill out our discussion. All right, shkoyach everyone.